Okay, so today we are going to ask the question whether Yosef exploited the Egyptians, right? Right. This week's parsha is the parsha for the economists, and the question is, does Yosef exploit the Egyptians? So let's just read a little bit what happens. And there was a famine, right? There was first 7 years of plenty, and then there was a famine. And the Torah tells us in Perek Mem Zayin, Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'lechem ein b'chol ha'aretz, there was no bread in the land, in all the land. Right? It seems to be not just Egypt, the whole world. Ki chaved harav ma'od, the famine was very severe. V'atela eretz Mitzrayim, eretz Kanan p'nei ha'ra'av, both the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. V'yelakei Yosef et kol ha'kesa hanimtza be'eretz Mitzrayim, be'eretz Canaan. Yosef gathers all the money that's to be found in Egypt and in Canaan, by Shever Shem Hem Shovrim, as payment for the food that they're getting. Yosef is a kesef based on Paro. So first of all, Yosef sells the food because he got a lot. He stored a lot of grain during the years of plenty. Now he's selling it to the people. But by Yitoma kesef Eretz Mitzrayim Eretz Canaan, the money was gone. Yosef, they said, please give us bread. Why should we die? We have no more money. Yosef, okay, maybe you don't have any money, but if you have no money, give me your cattle, and I will give you the food in exchange for the cattle. Yosef, so Yosef gives them the food in exchange for the horses and the cattle, the donkeys. And he provided them with bread for that year in exchange for all their livestock. So they come to him the next year. We have no money, we have no cattle. Right? All we have left is our bodies and our land. Why should we die, both us and our land? Purchase us and our land for the bread. And we will become, and our land will become slaves to Paro. So we can provide seed and we'll live, v'lo namus, and we won't die. V'ha'adamah lo seisham. So the land should not become a waste. V'yiken Yosef, it's called mas Mitzrayim l'paro, ki machru Mitzrayim ish shadehu. So now Yosef buys the entire land of Egypt for Paro. It becomes now privately owned by Paro. Because they sold, ki machru Mitzrayim ish shadehu, ki chazak aleihem ha'ra'av. The land is very strong. Vatehi haaretz leparo. So now, because of the famine, now the whole land belongs to Paro. On the surface, it seems that Yosef takes advantage of the Egyptian people during the years of famine by purchasing all their property and their land. And the question is, is this exploitation? So what do you think? You think Yosef exploited it? You think like
Hey,
this?
Rob, I have a question before that.
Yeah.
Was Paro the only one who knew
That's a great.
that there was going to be 7 years of plenty and 2 years of and 7 years of famine?
That's a great question. I don't know if it's I don't know if the answer is 100% clear. Wait, let me find.
Because I'm wondering why in infinite shrimp
Right.
everyone store their own food.
Correct. Correct. Right. So clearly they didn't. I mean, so I have the first source that I have here, sort of deals with this a little bit, and the Ramban writes, the question is, right? Why did the Egyptians know about this, that there would be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine? Ramban writes, "Vayikvot says kol ha'ochel." That when Yosef gathers the grain in last week's parsha, that Yosef brought it on the cheap when he bought it, therefore he had the food. And he sold it in the years of famine. So presumably, during the years of plenty, Yosef bought, there's probably excess grain. Yosef bought all the excess grain at a cheap price, law of supply and demand. And it's an interesting question. I don't think that there is a clear answer to your question, Ben. I would have imagined that, again, Yosef tells this information to Paro.
Doesn't he also tell it to everybody sitting
there? Right, everyone, right.
Oh, this guy is so smart.
Yeah, again, Paro, it's not a harm's ago. It would seem to me that Yosef does not have insider information. It would seem to me, even though it's not 100% clear, that I agree with you, Baruch. I think Yosef tells over this dream to Paro. People are wondering why they make this guy the second in command. I would imagine that they said, oh, he got the interpretation right. Oh, what was his interpretation? So it would seem that the people may not have taken Yosef that seriously, such that they were willing to sell, or maybe they didn't have the wherewithal. They didn't have like Amazon storehouses where they can store all their grain. I don't know. And there's Yosef.
Did Yosef buy the grain from them in the good years, or did
So there was
that a tax, a 20% tax for them?
No, it didn't. No, there was no tax. The 20% tax we'll see is that's after the fact. The Ramban's of the view, at least the Ramban thinks, he says v'itach in this first source in Ramban in last week's parsha, he seems to indicate. It's reasonable, it's logical that he gave them the money, like he paid a cheap price from the treasury of the king. So it was not a tax, he bought it.
Oh, okay.
That's the way the Ramban understands it. Mm-hmm. And now what's interesting, again, sometimes when we analyze someone's behavior, so it's important to analyze their behavior in the context of the society in which they're living. So sometimes to apply, you know, what someone does based on today's standards may not always be a fair comparison. But nevertheless, let's see what does Yosef do. It seems that actually Yosef does not exploit the Egyptians, and it seems, as we'll see, that he actually creates very favorable terms for them as best as possible. Again, he legitimately, he made a business decision. It seems that they knew about the dreams. Maybe they didn't take it that seriously. He took advantage, but I think everyone had that information. And then what happens?
Excuse me, Rabbi, just a quick question. Being Paro, did he have the power to take people's land without payment, like eminent domain, if he wanted to? I mean, Paro was like all powerful there.
Right. So it seems from the reading of the text that, well, first, right, there's always two questions. Number one is, do you have legal authority? And number two, is it a wise decision? Right. So I don't know the answer to the first question. But what's pretty clear,
he may not have been all powerful at the time of Yosef. Before Yosef, he may have only become all powerful because he owned everything.
Okay, maybe. What I'm saying is, what's pretty clear is that Paro did not make that declaration, Dave. So I don't know if it's because he wasn't powerful or he thought it was not a wise decision.
I'll just bring it up in the context of whether Yosef was manipulating and taking advantage. I mean, if you're paying somebody for something that Paro could have taken at any time if you wanted to, then you're being fair.
You're right.
That's the context
right.
that I was bringing.
But actually, look, so let's see what actually happens.
Well, but going back, it says, Vayik Botzis kol ochel shevar shanim. That doesn't say that he paid for it. It says that he gathered it from them.
I understand.
So if he just took it from them, for example, as a tax, maybe they expected that when the famine came, they would be given it back.
Right. Again, but what's interesting, Mike, is that it doesn't seem that it does. They don't claim at all. The Egyptians don't claim at all that they deserve the food. They basically are saying, we have no money left to pay. What else should we do? In other words, they're accepting the fact that they need to pay for their food and that Yosef has the food legitimately. And perhaps that's what leads the Ramban to say that he probably paid for it legitimately.
Aren't they coming up with these different ideas that they're...
Okay.
Take us a slave.
Okay, so let's see.
It seems to be that they're initiating this.
Yeah. So let's sort of see a little bit what happens here, right? So what Baruch points out is in Pasuk Yotes of Perek Mem Zayin, says they say they actually offer. Why should we die? Kaneo son of Esad Masene Balacham, purchase us and our land for bread. V'niyah nachtu v'adam sein avadim laparo. So what's interesting is if they thought that they're being, you know, taken advantage of, I don't know if they would willingly say, you know, buy us as slaves and buy our land as slaves. They're sort of admitting that this seems to be a legitimate response. And what Yosef does, what does Yosef actually do? In Pasuk Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet, Vayomer Yosef El Am. Okay, I've purchased you today and your land for Paro. Okay, here's the seed, sow the land. Now, you have to pay a 20% tax to Paro on the crop of the yield. And you will get how much? You'll get 80%. And they're so grateful. You've saved their lives. We shall be serfs to Paro. There's no indication, by the way, that they actually were slaves. What actually emerges is they're paying a 20% tax. And by the way, so what's interesting is Yosef buys the land. I don't know what the going rates were, but generally speaking, if I own land and someone's a sharecropper, the sharecropper is generally not getting 80%, right? The Ramban makes that argument, and others before should make the argument. The Ramban points out in Perek Mem Zayin Pasuk Yotes, says Kaneo son of Esad Masenu, Hine Amrulo Shigam Gufam Yikone Lavadim Laparo. They said that also their bodies should be acquired as slaves to Paro. V'chein Amar, he says, Hein Kanisi Eschem Hayom Besad Maschem, I have purchased you and your land. Aval Amar V'yiken Yosef is called Admas Mitzrayim Laparo. At the end of the day, Yosef only bought the land. He didn't, he said, Kimachu Mitzrayim Isadeo V'lomar Shitna Gufam Rak Adama. That Yosef, at the end of the day, he buys only the land. He doesn't buy them as slaves. And then the Ramban continues, and he says, "Vatam ki heim amulo shikneos and lavadim osay malachas hamelkir tzono." They said that basically we'll do whatever work you force us to do. Again, it seems, you know, to question what was the relationship between Paro and the Egyptians, is that there was an understanding that right now Paro did not have these rights, or they didn't feel that he, whether in theory and practice, that they were willing, that they had freedom. And they're willing to sell their freedom in exchange for land. But who loratsa raklik noses adamam? Yosef only wanted to buy the land. V'yishtamhem shiavdu osa la'olam. And he said, okay, they have to work the land. V'yuba arise bate avos laparo. They're going to be sharecroppers to Paro. V'achrechein amarlem hein konisi eschem ayom esad manchem laparo. I purchased you on your land for Paro. Lo lavadim kasher ma'atuni. Not as slaves as you told me. Rakim ha'adama tiyulo. But just only insofar as the land belongs to Paro. V'hinei roi sh'yitol ha'melch shu adon ha'karka arba yados v'tem ha'chamishis. And normally speaking, the landowner normally gets 80%, the sharecropper maybe gets 20%. V'ani es chasedi machem shetitlu osam chelek bala karka u'paro yitol chelek ha'roi la'aris. So even though normally the landowner would normally get the 80%, the sharecropper would get 20%, I'm giving you 80% as a sharecropper, the landowner is getting 20%. And that's why, by the way, they say, Nim Sachem Bein Adoni, we're so happy, we're Sheikalta Leili Tal Arba Yadol, Shinu Chali Chos Bahem, that you've given us such favorable terms, more than what was commonly accepted. And again, to say they're just scared of Paro and whatever he gives them they're happy with, doesn't seem like that was the relationship, that he could do whatever he wants.
Well, Rabbi, in your test, it says, Lama namusle necha gamanochi gamad masena.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't sound like they're happy about it.
They're not happy.
Sounds like they're resigned to it because what's their alternative?
I understand. But in other words, they're not feeling like he's doing anything illegal. It seems that, like, everything, in other words...
They seem pretty powerless. That, you know, you can...
No, I understand, because legally they don't own any crops. They don't own any food. Right,
well,
in other words...
They did before.
I understand, but they're never claiming throughout the conversation, that Yosef did anything that he was exploiting them. They're not claiming this at all. They're just saying, you know, we're following the standard, and now we're following what is fair. But what is fair will leave us dead because we have no more money. We have no more cattle. When in other words, when Yosef says, "Okay, now sell us the cattle," that they should have said, "Well, you're manipulating us." And in fact, when he only charged them a 20% tax, they're like, "Oh my gosh, thank you so much." They're overjoyed. So now my point is, their feeling of powerlessness seems to emanate from the fact not that they made bad decisions, that they sold the food where they shouldn't have, but not that Yosef did anything wrong. Okay? And by the way, the Netziv in Hamikdavar writes that he says that Yosef made a smart decision. He says that the Netziv is living in 19th century Russia. And he says, Kvar Kasa Ramban Shlo Kanosam. Rabban Ari wrote that he didn't purchase that. Vyuvar Lefanene Diyuka Kasa Bazeh. And we can explain the inference of the Pasuk in this. Vatamhu Shkacha Yeroa Tovasam Lucha. Yosef actually did this, not necessarily for their benefit, but he said it was a smart economic move for the kingdom. Kimahayu Abdi Amlucha, because if they were slaves of the king, Hari Mutal Amlucha Ligdog Leparnasam, Afil Lo Yu Amelim Lifiam Kokach. He would say if they were just slaves, so they'd have no incentive to work, and Yosef would have to take care of them regardless of whether they work or not. But now, like, Netziv is a big fan of capitalism. The Netziv is saying, who's living in the middle of the 19th century in Russia, he's saying it's a smart move economically, because let's say Yosef would have made them slaves, they'd have no incentive to work the land. And in fact, you could even make this argument even more and say that maybe to some extent Yosef only taxed them 20%. Imagine if Yosef taxed them 80%, how much would they be incentivized to work hard in the land? So this might have been a smart economic move as well. It's a combination, good for them and smart economic move. There's something else, by the way, that Yosef does, and that is population transfer. He says, "V'esam haviro sol la'ari mikse gvul mitzrayim bat katzeu." The Yosef removes the population town by town from one end of the border to the other. So the question is, why does he do that? So the Chizkuni writes, "V'esam haviro sol la'arim shlo yochazu od bekarka lefi shekana ad masam." So the Chizkuni wants to say it was a smart move because Yosef just bought their land. He doesn't. He bought it legally, legitimately, but he's still concerned that they're going to claim, "No, we didn't really want to sell it." Shema la'achar zman yachzor klitz bekarka shelo lomar yerusha sima vosai. They might say, "No, it's my inheritance." Levich haviruim shelo tehid lahem shum taina achshav ki kol achad v'achad garbi shel amito. That everyone's now living in their friend's ancestral homeland. So this is just, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and making it, even though this was a legitimate sale, purchase and sale of the land for the food, he didn't want them to have any consideration of going back on the sale after the famine was over and say, "I didn't really want to do this." There's a legitimate sale, and so he didn't want them to. He said, "It's mine. It's not mine. It's Paro's," and he wanted to make sure that would remain that way, and that they wouldn't go back on their word.
There's another reason. Is that nothing to the economic It'll be the Egyptians say, who are these Jews? What are they doing here? Well, we're all strangers. You don't. Nobody really has anything. You're all at different places.
Yeah, interesting. You're saying that he had... Okay, I didn't see that. That's interesting. Well, see, they're all strangers. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. The first, though, does point out that he says it was Hevir le'arim, arim, arim. The first points out that actually he transferred complete cities from one to the other. So people remained together in the new environment. So again, Yosef had an economic or political reason for engaging in population transfer, but he, under the circumstances, he wanted to make it as best as possible. Again, he owned the land, so he could do what he wants, and he wanted to make sure that the people wouldn't rebel, and that this sale would be legitimate. So he transfers the population, but he wants to make it as comfortable as possible. So therefore, he didn't want there to be like a. She says that they're all transferred together. And one other point, which is important, is the Rambam points out that when Yosef said, "V'lakei Yosef kol hakesef," he gathers all the money. The sipar kosef zev gomer inyan b'chol parsha l'diyah malos Yosef bechachma b'tvuna v'das. Yosef was a wise, understanding person. He was a faithful, trustworthy person. He called Kesef Beis Paro. He brought all the money to the house of Paro. He did not make treasure houses for himself. He did not send the money to Eretz Canaan. He gave everything to the king, to give everything to Paro. And so again, by that he found favor in the eyes of the people, and basically Yosef was the paragon of fairness and trustworthiness. Everything he received, he went to Paro. So I think that's also very important. Now, in other words, Yosef, it seems that Yosef does not exploit, if you see what's common custom, the Egyptians at the time understood, that this was the deal. And it seems that Yosef gave them much more favorable conditions than they would have anticipated. And Yosef, again, he's fair, he's trustworthy. And I think that perhaps this reflects the difference. This is an example where we understand the difference between the Hebrew leader and the Egyptian leader. And if you notice in the Psukim, so there's one group of people that did not sell their land to Paro. Who is that? Who does not sell? The priest, the Kohanim. Right? The Torah says in Pasuk Chabez, Rak Admas HaKohanim Lo Kana, the land of the Kohanim was not purchased by Paro. Kichok LaKohanim Eis Paro V'achlu Aschukam HaShenasen Lahem Paro. That basically they lived because Paro was required to provide for them food. So they didn't need to sell their land because Paro was contractually obligated to provide food for them, so they didn't sell their land. So isn't that fascinating that if you compare the Egyptian leader to the Hebrew leader, they're very different. Now, the Abravanel points out, so the Abravanel just points out that the fact that the Bnei Yisrael saw that the Egyptians would basically get a percentage, or the Egyptians would agree to tax themselves 20%, and yet the Kohanim would get their food free because they are engaged in spiritual things. Lo harabeinem kishetziv Hashem la seis amais shelovim amais hasheni la'aniyim. Vayos koni Hashem ochlim es pas bego uvim matnosav tamid. So the Rabbi now says that actually prepared the Bnei Yisrael to accept from God this idea of us giving Maaser to the Levium or giving Maaser Sheni to the poor people. In other words, why I work hard, why should I give money to the Kohanim and Levium? Why should I give money to the poor people, less fortunate? The notion that there's a special class that they have a certain job and their job, it's important that this job be done by a group of people, and that society should pay for them, that's very important. So Bnei Yisrael were used to that because they saw what happened to the Egyptian priests, that prepared the Bnei Yisrael for how they're going to treat their own Kohanim. That's what their Bravadel says. However, Rav Hirsch says something a little bit different. Rav Hirsch points out that he says, I just say it outside because we're running out of time, that he basically says that Moshe basically didn't learn from Egyptian society. That he contrasts the Egyptian priests. The Egyptian priests were wealthy landowners. They had a fixed, assured state income. Very different, right? They were landowners. Very different than the Hebrew Kohanim. Right? You can't say that Moshe basically cared about, Moshe was a Levi. Oh, so he cares about Shevet Levi, right? He cares about his people. No, it's just actually the opposite. The priests, the special priestly class of the Egyptians, they were landowners. And the fact they were landowners, and they just worked in the temple, their temples. They didn't go see the people. They were like the elite. And they had a fixed, assured income. Contrast that with the Kohen, who owns no land, who's dependent on the goodwill and the respect of the private individuals to support them. Very different. And maybe the message of this point of telling us about the Kohanim, the Egyptian Kohanim, the Egyptian priests, is to contrast Egyptian society with Hebrew society. The ancient Egyptian society is one where the mighty financially exploited the weak. And that's why the Egyptians were overjoyed with the terms that Yosef gave them, because they were unconventionally favorable to them, and that was uncharacteristic of Egyptian society. How do we know? Because it all starts from the top. The detached elitist priests were role models of Egyptian society. Now basically, I have money, I have power, and I take advantage. I don't care about, I'm a leader, and I don't care about those under me. And that's why the Egyptians naturally assume that they will become slaves to Paro, because that's the deal. However, Yosef becomes the role model of the Hebrew Kohen and the Jewish leadership, that just the opposite. They don't take advantage of the people, but they view their role as leadership that should serve the people, that has a moral code. So perhaps, when we look at it this way, we see what a wonderful leader Yosef was, not just being honest to Paro, being favorable to the people, and serves as a role model for how, ultimately, Jewish leadership should be and should behave.